This is episode 5 with Sarah Littlefield. Today we talk expired listings, negotiating, and hiring your friends.
Welcome to Luxury Real Estate Talk, where you get expert advice on buying and selling luxury real estate. Learn from the best and brightest real estate agents, brokers, and other professionals as they share real-life stories about the art and business of listing, marketing, buying, and selling high-end homes. Now here's our host, Rob Jensen.
Sarah Littlefield, a respected professional in the real estate market, is always on the cutting edge of the industry. She's personally closed over $500 million in residential sales. Sellers want a fast, high sales price, and Sarah delivers just that. Buyers want quick, comprehensive information, and Sarah delivers. As a top listing and top selling agent, Sarah takes most pride in meeting each of her clients' unique and individual needs. Sarah has received the highest award of the Wall Street Journal for top 1% realtors in the country. She's also been honored with many customer service achievement awards earned through customer satisfaction ratings. Her clients especially appreciate her dedication, calm, good counsel, and focused, innovative, passionate, and responsive approach to their real estate needs. She's excellent in an ever-changing, complicated, and challenging market. In graduate school, Sarah specialized in negotiations and taught international students international negotiation and mediation courses. Her corporate experience with Apple, Xerox, Priceline, and Avery Dennison provide clients with a sophisticated and refined marketing approach of their properties, all of which help her deliver the best results for her clients, distinguished by dedication and results. Hey, welcome to the show, Sarah.
Oh, thanks, Rob. It's good to be here.
Absolutely. I've known you for quite a while, and it's fun to finally jump on the line and share your expertise with the world.
I agree. I think we've known each other at least 15 years, maybe longer.
No, right. So how long have you been in the business?
I've been in the business 17 years, almost 18. And all of that in a market called Fairfield County in Connecticut. It's 1 hour outside of New York. So it's a very high-end luxury international market.
Got it. And how did you get started?
I was started in, I didn't necessarily think that I was going into real estate. I thought I might just do this as a part-time job. And I was a stay-at-home mom for a year, and I just loved it. So I started my career at Apple Computer. At the time, it was actually called Apple Computer, in Cupertino, and went to back to graduate school after that in Boston for business communications and public relations, where I studied and taught under the Roger Fisher Getting to Yes, Getting Past No. And so really kind of learned the art of PR and communications and sales, if you will. So I went into real estate, actually. When I first moved out here from California, I was working at Xerox as well as Priceline, and took a break and took some real estate courses to get my license, thinking I would sell my own house. And of course, got so busy in real estate that I never bothered to sell my own house. It took about 8 years to sell. but that's how I kind of got started, just really thinking of it as more of a hobby. And then it just became a business that I absolutely love.
That's exciting. So yeah. It seems like your education was a pretty good fit. I mean, did you see a lot of that apply naturally to real estate then?
I did. I think through the years, I really have thought of that, even lately, since I've been in the business as long as I have. My undergrad was, I went to Santa Clara, and I had an English major, business minor. And they always say it's great to have that liberal education, but how do you apply it to the workforce? And I actually, as I came out of Santa Clara, I met an alum from Santa Clara at Apple, and she said, I hadn't planned on interviewing you, but I'd like you to interview for this job. And there were 200 candidates and myself, and I ended up getting the job. So, and it was really pretty much a dream job, but you never know that when it's your first job. So I think that the skill set that I learned in high tech, which I did for years. And then I actually was working in the PR industry on the agent side as well as the agency side as well as the client side. I approach my business more like a actual PR pitch. Like we would, you know, that when we're doing a presentation for a high-end luxury client, I kind of take it in a two-tier approach. I take it as, you know, here's the marketing that we'll do to the agents who are, you know, our sales team to help increase your exposure to your house. And then the second tier would be obviously to the end user, to the buyer. If that first tier isn't doing their job, we love to get the end user asking their agent, if your house isn't on the tour, why that house isn't on the tour, and to add it. So that's, you know, kind of a two-tiered marketing approach. So we look at things in that fashion.
Got it. Well, that's a neat way to break that apart, which I haven't really heard talked about so far. So, and something I think a seller should take into consideration when interviewing agents, right, is, okay, so how do you specifically tell a seller, what's sort of your approach towards marketing versus agents versus consumers? What's different and how do you approach them?
Well, the agents, if you will, you want to give them the tools that make the property, you know, something that they can sell over the competition. So, you know, that's obviously in the pricing, the packaging of the property. I stage every home. So, and when I say stage, I don't stage with different furniture, because all that looks the same. Once you see one too many staged homes with the same furniture these people use, it sort of has a negative effect. So we use the client's own furniture, but we do definitely edit. And it's not based on how you live, but how it shows, making sure that rooms flow easily, that there's no clutter, that you're obviously looking at hardwood floors, the bathrooms don't have tile mats, you know, just things like that where you are really edited for the best presentation. So I find from an agent perspective, if you have the right product and you've packaged it correctly and you've priced it correctly, that it's something that, you know, agents will have the proper tools. And then if you overlay it with some promotion, press releases, that type of thing, where, you know, the clients are then the agents, if you will, are being asked by their clients if they can see the home, it's just giving them more tools to sell that particular product.
Right. And I think that highlights a neat part of this business, which is cooperating agents. You know, sometimes I have my own sellers that might say, well, you know, you've only showed our home three times and yet we've had 15 showings. And I've got to remind them that, hey, there's 15,000 other realtors out there. And it's quite common that our marketing reaches these people, whether it's online or offline and print. And they then show that to their agent, or they then pull it up and ask to
absolutely. And if you have that sort of cooperative, you know, people know that I price inventory correctly. I price to the market. The last several multiple offers that I've had have gone over asking. So it's, you know, you never sort of, I know the consumer likes to think they have room to negotiate, but when you price to the market, which is really the value of the home, you know, multiple people will know that it's a value. So because people have the tools, the end user, just like every other industry, it's, you know, the internet has sort of leveled the playing field with consumers or buyers having as much information as realtors do, which I think is wonderful because they really know value when they see it.
So what do you say to the seller that says we need to have room to negotiate?
Well, you know, I think through experience with that question, I typically explain to them that the market will, you know, there, you don't need that cushion if you price more according to what you think the end price will be. You'll tend to have more people in the bidding scenario. You know, you potentially have more offers and more bids. And with more bids, you actually have better terms. And that's not just in price. As we discussed, Rob, I had a situation recently in December. I had a lot that was a almost 2-acre lot in a 1-acre zone. And he met with 3 realtors. And I happened to see some of the materials from both realtors. And I called and asked him, because the house was going to be sold like in a week, and he lives in New Hampshire. So I was helping him get the property, cleared out. It was an estate. And I asked him what one of the agents who was competing for the business, what her price was, because I was looking at her materials and could not figure out what price she was suggesting for the property. And he said he could not get her to commit to a price, which was amazing to me that she hadn't given him even a price range. The other gentleman didn't have any sort of pricing in his material that I saw at the house. And when we were discussing this, he said, I loved how you and I ended up working together on the price. I mean, obviously, I gave him what we call the highest and best price analysis. And as we were reviewing it, we decided together on the best list price. At the time, it was $1,395,000. And it ended up resulting in 6 bids, 6 offers. And the highest offer was 105% of asking. And it closed within 30 days.
Mm-hmm. Love it. The key word that really caught my attention there is together, that you and the seller work together. There are times when I meet with folks and they look at me and they say, well, what can you sell our house for? And I understand they're mm-hmm. looking for pricing scenarios, but and I work with them and explaining where the comps are and where we're going and where the market's at. And yes, there's the highest price scenario. And in some cases, if the home's not remodeled or doesn't have a premium view or whatnot, mm-hmm. it's probably not the highest. It's probably somewhere in the middle. But the key thing there is if we can, when the seller understands that we're all on the same side, like I'm on their side, right. I'm on their team, and my goal is to get them the most, and it also right. gets me paid the
absolutely.
Most, too. Mm-hmm. That it's a teamwork approach. It's not just a what can I do, because it's the market and it's teamwork and it's what can they do to prepare the house and what will I do to market the house and how will we all work together.
It's so true. We were literally talking about that today at our office meeting. We said the same exact thing, Rob. So, yes, we're all working together and on the same team. Obviously, we want to net them the highest and best price, but also the terms as well. And I think in this kind of ever-changing market, that's important to note with the interest rates. An attorney had told me once, and I'll never forget it, he said, you know, in these kind of flat markets where our interest rate never changed, it was flat just across the board, it really created a situation where buyers were sitting on the sidelines and not making offers or bids. They didn't feel compelled necessarily to make a bid on a property with the interest rate staying the same. Now that we're in a market that is now changing with our interest rates increasing from where we've been in the last few years, we have a situation where buyers are more compelled to make offers on well-priced properties, because they're, you know, it's sort of that intersect between a well-priced home and also getting a lower interest rate. So I think the combination, if you will, is creating a situation that is a strong spring market for us.
Awesome. It's definitely a strong market in Las Vegas right now. So talk to me about expireds. I know that's a bit of a specialty for you. What are they? What does that mean?
Well, you know, expireds are properties that have been listed with another agent, Rob. And, you know, I started my career specializing in expired listings. I sold properties that had been listed with other agents sometimes 2 and 3 and 4 times. These are luxury properties with almost 3 acres, overseeing the Hunt Club. It's called Oxridge Hunt Club, mm-hmm. or overlooking the Country Club of Darien, and that type of thing. And these were beautiful properties, but honestly, the photography was not to the grade, I think, of the property. So with professional staging, as well as really high-end professional photography, as well as a more of a strategic pricing and packaging of the property, we're able to sell these homes that had been on the market sometimes 1 to 3 years and sell it, you know, within a sometimes within a 1 or 2 week time frame on the market.
I love it. Well, let me be the mean guy for a minute here and just ask, mm-hmm. why do you think you weren't the first agent they hired? How come you ended up being the third or the fourth?
Well, you know, it's through a situation where they may have known, you know, someone might have been related or a friend, and that's not always the best scenario, as we know. So it might have been something like that. Sometimes some of these clients have stayed with the same agent that did not sell their house the first time, thinking, well, maybe the second, you know, time frame, they'll give them another 6 months to 1 year, and then they still get the same results. So I think it's a combination of factors, Rob, that people ended up sort of going with these different agents. And it's funny because I will often have, in a situation that the equestrian property, a client said to me, I can't imagine how I got ready to list and sell my house without this proper staging and professional photography. But this was the third time she was listed.
Wow.
So it took us a lot to get the property decluttered, cleaned up, you know, proper repairs made. In some situations, we may decide we need to do a little exterior painting. You know, there's all sorts of things that we decide. And at that point, obviously, if they're going to spend any money, we've got to think that they're going to mean, and we're spending money because they're going to net it back. So we're not spending money just on cosmetics things, but really spending some money. In one case, they had wood doors, garage doors that we painted white, had been on the market with a competing brokerage firm. And we did some dust shots and photography and staged the house in the professional photography with wider lens and better lighting, really showed off the house. And it sold in the sort of declining market, was one of the only homes in the high end to sell within like a 6 to 8 month time period. And frankly, I don't think it was the best house on the market.
Wow.
I just think it was well presented.
I love it. So that brings up two questions that I have then. So for starters, mm-hmm. what would you say is a good guideline or for a seller to make the decision? Let's just say it's a seller. They've had their home on the market for 6 months. Mm-hmm. What should they, now they've got to decide, do they change real estate agents or do they extend with the current one? How should they make that decision?
Well, it's interesting, Rob. I think each person or each situation is slightly different, but I have a person that reached out to me recently last week to meet them at their house. They have 4 to 6 weeks left on their contract. And of course, you know, you cannot, you know, we as agents cannot approach a client that's listed with another agency. However, if they decide they want to reach out and have a second opinion, this person felt that his agent was only suggesting price reductions and price adjustments and nothing else to sell the property. It's a beautiful property. It has been professionally staged, and he just felt there's other strategies, not just price and getting his home sold. And he felt that they were not engaging all of the additional promotional activities needed to sell the property. So I guess what I would say is, I think when someone really realizes that maybe the current agent that they're currently working with has really done or utilized all the tools in their tool bag to get the property sold, and maybe they're not suggesting any additional creative options to getting more agents and more end users through the property, then I think it's probably the right time to change agents and agencies. I think that there are agents out there, Rob, like you and I, that do quite a considerable amount of education and familiarizing ourselves with the markets across the country and really seeing how other agents in other luxury markets are selling their homes and sort of doing the best promotional activities for that product. You and I were brainstorming on a project I have here in Connecticut, and you're out in Las Vegas, and you gave me a great idea about making sort of more of a 3D promotional product for
a rendering.
And so I went to a landscape architect, and they had just stunning, beautiful 3D renderings, Rob, on to basically make a flat lot or a lot without even a driveway, more of a vision in terms of what one could do there with, you know, a home as well as a pool and a pool house or a pavilion. So it was really such a great idea. And it really kind of changes the market in terms of selling a lot out here. Many people are doing aerial photography, but still with aerial photography, you don't get the vision of how one, as they say, journeys onto the property. The journey is where, how you actually approach, and maybe you have a sort of a circular or an ambling driveway. And then as you come to the property, it's like your, how you enjoy your pathways and how you get around the properties, and where's the garden areas, where's the entertaining areas, where are the play areas, you know, so it's like how you enjoy your property and the various parts of that property. And then the other part is the, so you had a journey. I'll get you those three, Rob. It's like journey, something and something. It was really beautiful how he outlined it. But making this sort of much more visual piece of property becomes something that one can actually visualize. Because I think the high-end consumers, if they can't visualize what they could build on a property, because they just don't have a diagram or a suggestion or even, you know, a driveway, I think that people, it's hard for them to make those next steps without going to a consultant, like a landscape architect or an architect for the house or a builder for, you know, construction of the property.
Right. And I think that, you know, what holds true, even so, whether you're selling a lot or even how this pertains to people selling a house, is just all the elements of emotion and getting people excited and envisioning themselves or their family or their, you know, their children out back or whatever that is. And that's the role of a good marketing and packaging campaign. And so
absolutely. And, you know, also understanding how a specific person is moved by a property. Some people are more analytical, so they're more logical in their approach to their emotions or how that property feels. Whereas some other people are more emotive. I've had people, you know, have tears in their eyes because their husband loves the property. And the wife just, she looked at him finally and said, I just, don't see where the Christmas tree would go in this house. And it's, you know, whatever holiday you celebrate, it's really interesting to have it come down to that moment of a holiday where she just didn't visualize their family there. Was really, you know, I think the statement that made him realize that that house was just not for them. It just wasn't something she felt about the home. As you and I know, Rob, it's like we've seen, I just, and I know you know the same thing. I know when someone's ready to buy a home. They sometimes often before they know they're ready to buy a home.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Just
it's
no.
Yeah, it's like they're, it's like playing a good poker player. They just they have that natural read on folks. And just one other thing, kind of to add to what you were talking about is, you know, residential is definitely emotional, whereas commercial mm-hmm. is just more analytical. And yes, there can be analytic approach to the price per square foot you're willing to pay, et cetera.
Absolutely.
But I mm-hmm. feel there's always that emotional angle. I've got another fun question to throw at you since this kind of pertained to the expired listing mm-hmm. talk we were having earlier. So what they, you know, in general, they say hiring your friend is a mistake, but what happens mm-hmm. when you're their friend?
Well, you know, that's interesting when you say that, Rob. I've had, you know, it would have to be, I think it works in being in this business as long as we have been. One of the things I know when a new person enters the, you know, starts their career in real estate, they often say, well, I have a lot of friends and family. And I usually tell them those are probably the people that will list with you the least because they know that you don't have any experience, right? That
yep.
you're just starting out. And that would really try a friendship in terms of, you know, this is one of people's largest assets. So, I think it works against the new agent if they think they're going to get listings from their friends and family. I think that only happens when you've been in the business as long as we've been in the business, where the friendship does work to your advantage because they know you, they trust you, and they know that you would, you know, do what it takes to get the property sold. So I think in that type of situation, it took a number of years under my belt as a top performer to get that sort of niche of friends and family. I find a lot of my clients are become dear friends. So, you know, we sort of, if we weren't good friends to begin with, we end up good friends at the end. So, you know, I definitely get that audience of friends and family, and I love to help them. But I think you have to have years in the experience and a track record to get that audience.
Well, and I'd say especially for the market we both work in, which is the luxury market, you know, it's mm-hmm. not a segment or a price point that you would want to let someone sort of experiment on you with, so to speak.
Exactly. 100% agree. 100% agree. And, you know, sometimes they're calling it what we call ad hoc. And ad hoc is a situation that is unique within its own particular case. So for instance, Rob, if there's a person that is in your office that I find that some newer agents that are just starting out, if they have a family house or a friend and it's a luxury market, they may want to partner with a more seasoned agent to list and sell the home. And I think that's happening more often. It's a good education for the newer agent who's their friend, but yet you still have a seasoned, experienced negotiator and marketer on your team. So I think in those situations, you can really have a win-win by thinking a little more creatively.
Got it. And to kind of throw another term out there for sellers that might be in this situation is a co-listing. You know, so
if
someone wants to hire you or me and their you know, niece or their daughter is a new agent, you know, hey, Rob, would mm-hmm. you be willing to co-list with my daughter?
Exactly.
So
and, you know, each I definitely see some of that, Rob, and I think that can work. And it's on a case-by-case, as they say, ad hoc basis, where it's based on, you know, the two agents would discuss the details of how they'd service that listing. One of the things I found interesting is a lot of people, when deciding on what agent to hire, they may ask on pricing, strategy, marketing strategy. But one of the things that really does not often get asked is how one negotiates, how an agent negotiates. And that's one where I definitely have an edge with my master's. I studied negotiations, international negotiations, Dr. Ratson. Okay. I studied under Dr. Ratson, Scott Ratson, out of Emerson College. And he taught international negotiations and had been an original student under Roger Fisher for getting past no and getting to yes and getting past no, which are two books. Getting to Yes is his original book. Getting Past No is working with difficult customers. And I think one of the things people don't necessarily ask of their luxury agent is their negotiation skills. And that's a key component to one's net result, is how someone negotiates. So I think that's an important question to ask of any agent that you're looking to hire. So I find that in exploring some scenarios, for instance, in a multiple bid situation, how an agent, if they've had experience with that, and how they would suggest particular strategies in that type of situation. And or there's other situations where you've had a number of showings and you have an interested party, say they've come back a second time and they haven't bid on the house. You know, there's all sorts of different strategies as far as doing a reverse bid or offer that a seller can actually do and make an offer to the buyer that's been through.
I've heard of that before.
Times.
Have you done that?
Mm-hmm. I have.
And you do that in writing. You've actually wrote the offer in writing to that
We didn't put it in writing. No, we presented it verbally, but it did result in a sale. And so there's all sorts of different strategies in terms of how one negotiates to help the seller achieve their highest and best price as well as their terms. And I believe these are questions or scenarios or strategies that are never discussed between a seller and a potential agent that they are interviewing. And I think people should be asking more pointed questions and some scenarios to see exactly how the agent would handle some various strategies, or if they've had any experience with these type of strategies, what they would recommend. So sort of, Rob, taking it back from the actual working with the agent and giving them a couple of scenarios and asking them how they would handle that strategically in a negotiation, whether the person's put in an offer or whether you have multiple offers on the table. I think it's important, and it's definitely something that can either net them a whole lot more money or cost them.
Absolutely. And once again, I think that comes back to having a more effective conversation when buyers or sellers are interviewing agents. What would you say is just kind of a common mistake, whether you see it on the listing from a listing agent when you're repping a buyer, or it's a mm-hmm. mistake maybe made by a buyer's agent when submitting an offer on one of your listings? What's just something
I think one of the common mistakes people make are they are somewhat loose-lipped, and they might, you know, innocently tip some information off on their sellers to what their motivation is. And as you know, we have fiduciary responsibilities to our clients to not disclose their personal motivations for a sale unless they've authorized you to do so. So I think in some situations, agents are just chatting. And I had a situation where I was through a broker open house with a gentleman who doesn't practice often. He's an agent. He listed his own home, and he usually refers business. So he and I were going through this house, and it was a house of a seller that was interested in his specific house to buy. And the agent didn't know who he was and just mentioned that, you know, they had a house they were interested in, and just sort of tipped her hat on some things that really shouldn't have been disclosed. And so kind of left a situation where there was that could cost them in a negotiation if they were to put an offer in on a house.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Well, and something that brings up something that's kind of unique now with all these, you know, home video cameras and baby cams and all these things, that some of these have audio. So even if you're a buyer out there looking at homes, sometimes mm-hmm. you're better off keeping your, you know, if you really love it and you want to make an offer, maybe you're better off waiting until you get back outside or you're in the car.
100%. I always ask people to be very, just non-emotional, as you would say, Rob, right? You don't want people to know that that's your dream home, and, you know, it basically exposes you to not be as strong in a negotiation.
100%.
If you've sort of, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time today. I know you're a busy, busy bee over there in Connecticut. For people,
well, it is busy.
For people looking to get a hold of you and possibly help them buy or sell, what's the best way to find you?
Well, it's Rob. It's easy to find me. I could be found through my Facebook website, which is Sarah Littlefield Darien and Row 8 Real Estate. So it's Sarah Littlefield Darien and Row 8 Real Estate. I can be found on my website, which is sarahlittlefield.us. I can also be found on Zillow or realtor.com or Trulia. All those sites. I'm quite only a Google away. You could find me easily. Sarah Littlefield, Coldwell Banker.
Perfect. And for our listeners out there, we'll also put these in the show notes. And once again, thank you for listening to Luxury Real Estate Talk, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Great. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of Luxury Real Estate Talk with Rob Jensen. The Rob Jensen Company exclusively specializes in 42 guard-gated and select-gated communities in Summerlin, Las Vegas, and Henderson. Find us online at robjensen.com as well as on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at Rob Jensen Co.